This is season 2, episode 1 of the Transformation Chamber with City of Houston Council member Edward Pollard. In this episode, we discuss why the right relationship is more valuable than money, how education is a way out of systematic oppression, and why you don't have to be the best, just be consistent. With that said, let's step into the Transformation Chamber. All right, so welcome back to season 2 of the Transformation Chamber. I'm excited to be back with you guys. I am here with Houston City Council member Edward Pollard, an esteemed gentleman, a gentleman and a scholar. And his background speaks for itself, man. I read his bio. I was floored. This gentleman has done a lot with his time here on earth so far, and I'm just looking forward to what you're going to do next. What's up, brother? How you doing?
I appreciate you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, man. So listen, let's just jump right into it because we got a lot to cover. Tell us about the landscape of your childhood. I know you were born and raised in Houston. You know, just give us the matriculation of your life from then to now, how you got to be a city council member and amongst so many other great things.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a product of Southwest Houston. Grew up in the West Belfort, Bob White area.
Yeah.
So right there between Hillcroft and Fondren off of West Belfort. Went to all HISD schools, graduated in 2002 from Lamar High School. Like many youth, especially from the inner city here in Houston, you know, we grow up wanting to play sports.
Yep.
So I played basketball all throughout middle school, high school, got a basketball scholarship to go to Morehouse College. So went off to Atlanta to Morehouse. I majored in political science.
Okay.
I played basketball there, was a academic All-American. Left there in 2007, actually played overseas for a couple years.
Yeah.
Played in Chile, played in Singapore. And then I came back to Houston to pursue my law degree, went to Thurgood. And that's where I actually caught the political bug. I did an internship in 2011 at the state capitol.
Okay.
And,
yeah, cause I was wondering what, you know, from playing basketball to all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, I never really liked school growing up, honestly, but the only subject that really caught my attention was like history, history, government. I was always interested in how the government was set up, the constitution, the laws. And so, I always wanted to be an attorney. So I knew if I didn't make it in basketball that I would eventually be going to law school. Quick story is, so I was playing overseas and that lifestyle is not really stable. I mean, you can get cut at any time, back. And so after coming back from Chile, I was looking to get an offer from another country to move my way up. And I was waiting and waiting here in Houston in the off season, did not get a contract or an offer. And so my LSAT score to allow me to go to law school was about to expire because I took that 2 years earlier in undergrad.
Okay.
And so I had to make a decision. And so I told myself, if I don't get an offer by August when school starts, I'm just going to go to law school.
Gotcha.
And so I didn't get an offer and I applied. Oh, I enrolled in school. And 2 months later, October, I'm in law school and I get a call from a country. They give me an offer and I had to make a decision right there. You know, do I drop out of school and go back and play basketball or do I stay? So I talked it over, prayed about it and knew I did not want to go back to school in my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, let me just knock it out now.
Get it done now.
And decided to stay. And while I was in law school, I did an internship at the state capitol working for a state representative. And caught the political bug out there. Said, this is kind of what I want to do. I want to represent my community. So I graduated in 2012. Started to get real involved on a grassroots level with some local organizations. And ran for state representative about 4 years ago. Came up short in the Democratic primary against an incumbent. Stayed out there. Kept trying to develop relationships. Stay involved. And when the city council seat came open in the same area, I decided to run for that and came out on top.
Man, congratulations, first of all.
Appreciate it.
And so, I've, again, after reading your bio, I saw that not only are you a lawyer, you also the founder of Suits for Success, it is. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is and what kind of work you're doing in the community? And I'll add on to that because I follow you now and I follow you for a little while now. And it seems like almost every day you're somewhere helping people, doing some good in the community. And so, which is very inspirational. Kind of talk about what is your purpose and your reasoning behind all that?
Yeah. So Suits for Success was a concept me and a friend of mine came up with several years ago, probably about 6 years ago. We were noticing that a lot of nonprofits that focused on teenagers were usually for women or for girls. Mm. And we're trying to see what is being done to really mentor the youth when it comes to male mentorship. And so we kept seeing that around prom time, people were donating dresses for girls for prom, but we didn't see anything for boys. So we ran with that concept and said, what can we do to give back? So we came up with Suits for Success, which is a mentorship program that focuses on high school senior males. We put them through a semester long mentorship course where they learn life skills, things you wouldn't learn in a traditional classroom setting. So etiquette training, public speaking, resume building, interview techniques, personal finance, that's how to amazing. Tie a tie. And at the end of the program, we give each student a free suit, shirt, and tie for high school graduation. So we've been running that through high schools and HISD for the past 6 years. And I didn't know anything about a nonprofit or how to set it up or anything. We just had an idea. I went and approached a few schools. They were excited about it, let us in, and we just kind of did it by trial by error, and still going to this day.
That's dope.
So yeah, I don't try to limit myself when it comes to engaging and impacting the community. You come up with an idea and just go do it. You don't have to have a lot of insight or resources. You just have to have the passion for the people. And I think if you have genuine good intentions and you out there trying to do the right thing, it'll all come together.
That's so funny. And I agree with that 100%. A lot of times you just got to get in motion, and you get in motion and you're moving in the right direction. People start pouring into
for sure.
you. The resources start showing up out of nowhere.
For sure.
So a lot of times we spend too much time thinking about what we want to do instead of just go do it. You know what I mean? Get out there, do it. And then you'll see.
Because people are going to be grateful just because of the effort. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to do everything 100% right or know everything that you're doing from the jump.
Absolutely.
But just to get out there and be a extra hand to help,
absolutely.
To guide, to mentor, people will appreciate that. And you'll see how you're impacting people's lives without really knowing how you're going to impact their lives, but just being around, just by showing up, just
absolutely.
By caring,
absolutely.
it's going to impact their
lives.
Like
you said, just by showing up. I mean, I come from an underprivileged community, and there were times, well, honestly, it felt like nobody cared about us.
Yeah.
But then that one person or that one organization that decided to show up, it expanded our minds. I think T.D. Jakes says the difference between good and greatness is exposure.
For
sometimes
sure.
we just got to be exposed, you know what I mean? So that's amazing what you and your partner are doing to expose these students. Man, you have a beautiful family, by the
Thank
way.
You.
How much does family play into your success and who you become? Because you're safe to say you're a young man, and you know a lot of people are not ready to settle down and get married and have kids. Like, how much of that? What's so important about that to you? And how much of that has played into who you've become?
It plays a lot. I mean, it gives you focus, discipline, structure. You have someone that's going to support you through the ups and the downs. And what I do, especially as a politician, you know, I'm under a microscope and people are judging your every move.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you feel like you let people down or you didn't do the right thing. But family is there to support you. When I come home and I see my son, you know, run down the stairs and he's smiling, he could care less what may have been said about me on the television or if someone made a crazy post about me on social media. And so it keeps you balanced and it puts things in perspective.
Man, that's beautiful. Talk about that microscope, bro. Like, that's not easy. You know, I mean, for that very reason, I feel like I would never get into it. What's it like living under that microscope?
It's definitely different, for sure. I mean, I always kind of knew people being from Houston and being out and about. But now that I'm a politician, my reach in the image is more vast. And so, you know, I can pull up to a restaurant and the valet is going to know me. Or I'm at a restaurant inside the restaurant and someone may notice me and say, hey, I've been following you doing X, Y, Z.
I'm a
just like
example.
Just like you said,
with
you, this is the first time we met, but you have been noticing things from afar.
Exactly.
And so you kind of have to always be mindful of that, be aware of your surroundings, be aware of your peer group, where you are, what you're doing. But for me, although sometimes it is overwhelming, In the grand scheme and big picture of everything, it just comes with the territory.
Comes with the territory. Yeah. Man, talk about, you know, again, such rich history in your family, right? Your father was a Marine, and your grandfather, he helped, what was it, organize the Civil Rights March?
Yeah, so my grandfather, Reverend T.J. Jemison, actually was Dr. King's mentor. And my grandfather actually organized the first bus boycott in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yeah.
He did that in 1953. And it was used as the blueprint for Martin Luther King when he did his bus boycott in Alabama 2 years later. And so my grandfather met with Dr. King, showed him how to do a successful bus boycott. The difference was in Baton Rouge, the bus boycott only lasted 8 days. Mm-hmm. So it didn't get as much notoriety. But in Selma and in Montgomery, it lasted over a year.
And
it was because of that struggle during that time over an extended period of time that the world started to take notice. And I think we've all seen the movie Selma and Bloody Sunday and what happened with John Lewis and many others, countless others, with their fight for civil rights. And that's what put the civil rights movement on the map. You know, when Rosa Parks didn't get up from that seat.
Absolutely.
And it started from there. But my grandfather, if it was not for him, Martin Luther King would not have had a model or a blueprint to follow to be able to successfully do his. And so definitely a cherish, something I cherish is knowing that my grandfather had a rich piece of history.
I can only imagine, man.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, rest in peace to Senator Lewis, man. May God, you know, rest with his soul. You having such rich history like that, that's, you know, everybody doesn't have you know, that type of history. What are the responsibilities that sit on your shoulders for standing on the shoulders of the men that came before you?
Yeah. I mean, I think, we all have a lot of responsibility and, my grandfather has, some notoriety for what he did, but, all of our families have ancestors that went through some type of struggle, some type of sacrifice to uplift their family and their community to get us where we are today. And I think it's imperative that we do all that we can and make sure that we keep that legacy going, because even though we've come a long way, we have an extremely long way to go. And you can see it just by going on social media or turning on the television that a lot of the same images that we saw back in the civil rights era, we're seeing the same things now. And we have to learn from history and see what can we do to propel ourselves so that we aren't keep seeing the same images over and over, because it gets frustrating at times, you know, to continue to have to deal with the same injustices that especially the Black community is faced with. But now is our opportunity, as our generation is at the forefront of being able to get out there and impact change, to say, okay, what can we do so that our kids won't have to face this when they get our age?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's somewhere I wanted to go with you, being a Black man in politics, right? Just right now, the landscape of the world, just where we are, you know, what are the thoughts and feelings when you show up to work every day, you know, just doing what you do on your daily fight? What do you see that we could do to truly make change? Because we talk about change a lot. But what are some actionable items or some steps that you say, okay, as a Black people, as a people in whole, as a white people, these are some things that need to happen?
Yeah. Well, from a Black perspective, for too long, I think we've been way too comfortable in just going out there to vote. Like, we keep saying vote, 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 vote. But I mean, what are you voting for? How is your vote going to be any different than the last time you went to go vote? And Blacks, we are 90% Democrat when we show up to the polls, right? And we're the only race that is predictable like that. When you talk about whites, Asians, Hispanics, they're all split. You don't know where they're going. But Blacks, we're 90% Democrat. And I'm not saying we jump ship to the other side, but I think we need to use our numbers as leverage and be more independent with our options and our choices, so that we make the parties come to us, make us a priority, put our issues at the top.
Absolutely.
Because if you look at home ownership, if you look at access to healthcare, if you look at jobs, if you look at education, from the 50s and 60s to now, we're pretty much consistent. You're not going to see a big jump from our education level back in the day to where we are now. You're not going to see a big jump from Black home ownership from back in the day to now, but we keep voting, right? And we keep voting for the same people, same party. And so we need to be smarter. We need to make sure that we go and vote, but we're only voting for candidates who have proven that they have engaged our community, that they're in touch with our community, and that they're making our issues a priority.
And I'll just touch on that too. And not just because an election is coming, right? Like, because we are notoriously pandered during elections, right?
For sure.
So like that person who's running, all of a sudden they're going to be on stage with Jay-Z, or, you know what I mean? They want to appear in some episode of a Black sitcom. And it's like, we're clearly being pandered. Well, what person or which candidate has stood for our race of people through and through, even when they weren't running?
Because we're a powerful block of votes.
Oh, man.
You have to understand, especially on the Democratic side. Let's take the president, for instance, Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. People had him dead in the water, right? They said he couldn't win. And then Super Tuesday came around, and the Black communities from all around the nation were getting him these wins in all these key states.
Wow.
That was us. And because of that, we have to understand the power that we have in those decisions to vote for a particular person to make sure that, okay, we're supporting you. What are you going to do to support us?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, man. Talk about your transformation or from time where you were, let's just say, young Edward and you weren't so sure, right? Until now, was there a defining moment in your life where you or a switch went off and you said, okay, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to be. And this is how I'm going after it.
Yeah, I've always been someone with that, a go-get-it type of attitude. Even when I played sports, I was very tenacious. I was someone who went the extra mile to try to have the leg up or an advantage over my competition. So I've always been driven by competition. I can't think of a singular moment, except for when I think about how I caught the political bug back in 2011 when I was working in the state legislature. I remember I was in Austin. I was at the state capitol, and it was late one night, and the House of Representatives, they were on the floor, and they were discussing different legislation. Mm-hmm. And I was up top in what's called the galleries, where people can sit and look at the state legislatures down there discussing policy and passing laws. And so I was one of the only people up there. It was late one night, and I was looking over, and I did not see many people who looked like me. And I definitely didn't see any young people, but they were discussing issues that affected my community.
Right, right.
So I remember that moment thinking, I don't want to sit up here. I want to sit down there, and I want to have a voice in the conversation.
Wow.
And at the time, our mayor, Sylvester Turner, he was one of the state representatives that were down there on the floor. And I remember calling him that night, and we had a long conversation about, you know, my frustrations with it seeming like we don't have enough representation. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough voices at the table, and kind of making a decision around that time that once I get out of law school, I'm going to enter politics.
Man, that's cold, bro. What was that frustration? Like if you know, how did you turn that into driving motivation? Because you went to Morehouse first, and then you went to
law school
at Thurgood.
Yeah.
And then you are also studying through Harvard
So I got a certificate in negotiations from Harvard Business School. I do personal injury law. I own my own law firm here, and practically 95% of my day is doing negotiations.
Gotcha.
So I said, you know, people put this Harvard mystique out there. Let me check it out and see what it's about. So I took some online classes, and it is the truth. I can tell you, anybody who talks about Harvard, it is tough.
Wow.
But yeah, I got a certificate in negotiations from there. But overall, when it comes to the frustration, it was more so that frustrated that I didn't have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And what can I do to impact my community? And not necessarily frustrated with the system, just frustrated that I didn't have a place in the system.
Gotcha.
And so I started to think about, well, okay, what can I do? Well, the only thing I can do is jump from sitting in these seats to sitting down there on the floor. And so I knew after law school that I was going to run for office, and I positioned myself from that moment forward to put myself on that track.
That's super dope. It's funny you talk about that. You saw a void, and a lot of times this is what makes so many entrepreneurs successful, and just successful people. They see a void, and then they're willing to do whatever it takes to fill that void. And a lot, it's taking the road less traveled,
yeah,
right? And then you go down that road, and now all of a sudden you're creating pathways for other people, because now people are looking at you. Young Black men are looking at you,
yeah,
and saying like, yo, this is what I can do. Okay, so here's a question for you, and I'm very excited to hear your answer. Let's say that a room of openly racist white people were willing to lend their ear to you. What would you say to them?
For one, I would be excited. I try to put myself in those type of rooms, actually. But it wouldn't be much more what I would say to them. I would just want to listen mm-hmm. to them first. I want to hear their perspective on certain issues. So there'd have to be, let's say we talk about Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. right? I would want to hear their views on what they believe Black Lives Matter means to mm-hmm. them, and why when we say Black Lives Matter, they may get frustrated or upset and say all lives matter, right? So first thing you want to do is you want to listen, right? You want to give people an opportunity to express themselves. You want to show that you can display mutual respect, right? You want to change their demeanor and their perspective of you, right? And once they understand that, okay, this guy isn't being defensive, this guy is trying to engage us, right? Then you'll see that wall come down. Mm-hmm. And once that wall comes down, I'll be able to respond. And I'll be able to respond in a way in which it's not trying to attack, mm-hmm. but it's trying to educate. And not educate as in preach, but educate as in let me give you my perspective or our perspective as the Black community, and what this means to us. And hopefully by doing so, most of the people in the room should be rational enough to say, even if I don't agree with everything you're saying, I appreciate your approach. Right. I appreciate the way you conveyed that.
I heard you.
Mm-hmm. And we can agree to disagree. But at the end of the day, it's not about going tit for tat. I think that's the thing that people get so frustrated with when it comes to politics, is it's a Democrat versus Republican. It's a me versus you. It's a them versus us. And so I've tried to do it completely different. So if you look at my politics, I stand almost dead in the middle, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not on the walls. Mm-hmm. I like to go straight to the middle with my hand extended, and I try to shake hands and make deals, right? Because you're not always going to get everything that you want. I know that as a lawyer, when I negotiate, a good settlement offer is going to be something that we both walk away with satisfied. We may not get everything we want, but mm-hmm. we live to see another day. Mm-hmm. And we've earned each other's respect. So when I see you again at the next negotiation table, you don't think I'm an a-hole.
Right.
But you're like, okay, I can work with this person.
Right.
And you have to understand, especially in politics, you're going to have varied perspectives, varied mindsets, varied backgrounds, right? And everyone's not always going to see things the same way. But your goal is to push the ball forward. So we have to find ways to get on the same page. That's going to come through communication and dialogue. That's going to come through compromise. That's going to be sitting back and thinking, okay, maybe I did not look at it that way. Mm. Maybe it's something I can change, right? And by doing so, you're going to see that you're able to develop relationships. And life is really all about relationships across the board. It doesn't matter what industry that you're in. If you have the right relationships, it's more valuable than money. And so I've been able to propel myself in certain circles, even though I'm the youngest Black elected official in Houston, but I'm able to be in certain rooms with, you know, maybe an older white demographic mm-hmm. that they hear me because of my approach. I represent District J, which is Southwest Houston, and we're the most diverse area in the city. However, we have no Black neighborhoods in the entire district. I'm probably the only Black elected official in the state that represents an area with no predominantly Black neighborhoods.
Wow.
So I had to go into communities of people who did not look like me. So when I'm knocking on doors, I'm showing up to homeowners association meetings, they're seeing this young black man, but they may be a older white woman.
Wow.
or older Asian male, right? And I have to be able to convince them that I can represent you well. Even though we come from different communities, even though we're different demographic, different age, different perspectives, we can find common ground because I want what's best for my community because I live here in the same community that you live. Mm-hmm. And I know you want safer schools and you want better streets and you want your trash picked up on time. You want safer, safer parks, right? So let's work together on that. And so I think it's more about having mutual respect for the other side. Mm-hmm. Once they see that, you will be able to get things done.
Man, I love what you just said. Cultural tolerance is one thing. What I say, we can be from two different cultures as long as you're willing to understand that we all want the same thing. Like when you said, when you peel stuff back, it becomes easier to connect with other humans.
For sure.
That's in business. That's in life.
Anything.
In school. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like being on a sports team, and you may be on a team with, you know, you may be a Christian, but somebody on the team may be a Muslim. You may have a white guy whose family's from the country. And you might have a black guy, he's from the hood, you know, but they all on the same team.
Right.
Right. And when they have a common purpose, they can put all of their differences aside for the common good of trying to win the game. And so that's kind of how I approach things as well. I don't have to be where you're from or agree with everything that you do.
Absolutely.
But I can be open-minded enough to sit down and understand that we're going to be stronger together than fighting each other.
So, and I'm going to just take that and put that in practical purposes for people. Find the common good in any situation. When you go into a situation and you're trying to get a job or whatever, close a deal, find out what you guys have in common.
Correct.
And then capitalize on that. And it's not to take advantage of, it's to show that, hey, we have something that we can both benefit from, like you said.
Yeah, mutual benefit. That's life. At the end of the day, for people to want to do something, to support something, to go the extra mile, they have to have an incentive.
Mm-hmm.
What is the why?
Exactly.
And once you find that common bond, that's the why.
Absolutely.
We can accomplish this together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what do you say to right now, young black girl, young black boy in the hood, you know, they don't have father and grandpa the way you had.
Mm-hmm.
There's no true rich history that they know of.
Okay.
What do you say to those kids when you go and speak to those kids? Because I see you in the communities all the time.
Yeah.
Their story is not quite yours.
Well, education is everything. At the end of the day, education opens more doors than anything else. And I don't care how poor or disadvantaged your school is. At the end of the day, you're put in a room with 30 other individuals, right? You all are all competing. You got the same books, the same teacher, the same work, right? You rode on the same bus, you're eating the same meals, right? You get there at the same time, they leave at the same time. Who's going to win out of this room?
I like that.
Some of y'all not going to win. Yeah. But life is not supposed to have everybody win. And life is not fair, and it never will be, right? Some people are going to excel because they went the extra mile. Some people are going to skip class. They're going to not pay attention, be the class clown. They're going to fail.
Right.
Everybody isn't supposed to drive the Mercedes, right? So I tell those kids that you can be anything that you want to be, but it's up to you, right? You're going to have a good attitude, right? You can control that. You got to get there on time. You can control that. You can ask for help, right? When you don't know something, you can control that. You do those things, even if you're not the smartest kid in the room, that teacher's going to help you.
Absolutely.
That guidance counselor is going to say, you know, I got this kid with some potential. I can call over to Texas Southern or the Prairie View and say, hey, I got this kid. They're on the borderline, but we can get them in. I'm pretty sure that they're going to excel.
Yeah.
Right. So I tell them education is everything. Education is emancipation. Knowledge is power. Those things are true. And so if you want to make something of yourself, you want to better your situation, better your family, then you have to take education seriously. And I think it's crazy to think, even when I was growing up or we were growing up, that especially in the black community, that if you're smart or you care about school, then you're lame or you're a nerd.
Right.
You know, people try to downplay if you carry books. That's society purposely. That's the systematic racism.
Mm-hmm.
That's a systematic infrastructure that breaks our communities down that we don't even see at the time. Right. But we want to teach our kids, no, it is cool to be smart. It is cool to study. Because at the end of the day, the better you do in school, people are acknowledging that this person has something to offer, mm-hmm. right? They have a skill. They're knowledgeable. They can get the job done. I can work with this person. Mm-hmm. But if you're the kid that's slacking, acting like it's too cool to study and you don't care about anything, well, no one's going to really want to invest in you.
Right.
And so I try to really impart on these kids that care about your education. No matter if your mom or whatever your dad's situation is, it don't matter where you come from. You can go home, find a way to study. Mm-hmm. And if you, and whatever your circumstances are, if they're not the best, ask for help. And I guarantee if you have a good attitude and you're trying, people are going to try to help you.
Oh, man, that's what's up, bro. Yeah. You're giving game right now. You spoke to something, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. I try to convince, not even convince, sometimes I try to just educate some of my white counterparts, but also some of my black friends, the damages that slavery had when you talk about social injustice, like how much it really had on us. I think it's so easy to like, oh, that was slavery. No, that was like, that was 400 years of oppression, mm-hmm. You know, changing the mind of a man, beating mm-hmm. into them this new psychological like preface that they have to live with and believe about themselves. And sometimes I think as much as we want to get over social injustice and as much as white people want us to get over it, I don't think people realize how deep the cut and the wounds are that we're still living with today yeah. from slavery. So could you just touch on, in your words, what do you think that is that, you know, that's holding, honestly, the totality of the black community back? I mean, we have brothers like you, some of my friends. I've been fortunate in my life, too, but not all my friends are fortunate.
Yeah.
If I be honest with you, 2 out of 10. Right. And like it's 8 of them who just didn't make it out. Mm-hmm. What do you, you know, what do you think it is? Speak to it. And then also some things that you think we could do to change it moving forward.
Yeah. So first we have to understand that people say the system is broken, but actually the system is working exactly the way it was designed to. Right. The system was designed to oppress. When they talk about systematic racism, you can look at it like this. Black men are like 6% of the population. Mm-hmm. However, we're like 40-50% of those who are incarcerated, right? So the imbalance is off. Then you have to ask yourself, okay, why is that? Okay, when you incarcerate a person, you take them away from their family. Now the family is broken. So there is no foundation, right? But the thing about it is, once that person is incarcerated and they're in the system, once they get out, the system makes it very hard for them to ever be able to do anything else
right.
because now they have a conviction on their record. Mm-hmm. Once they have the conviction, they can't get a job. If you can't get a job, or you can't get an apartment, if you can't get an apartment and you don't have a job, then you're going to resort back to, I have to take care of myself and my family some way, mm-hmm. somehow. Mm-hmm. So then you resort back to doing things that got you in trouble in the first place. Because those are the only opportunities that exist, and boom, you're back in. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's a system that's created on purpose. It's a reason why it says on a job application or an apartment rental application, have you been convicted
right,
of a felony?
Right.
Right. Those things are there in place. And that's when people say, how do you affect policy? That's not a law. That's policy created off of a law. Mm-hmm. That's where politicians come in and can change those things. And that's why when people say go vote, those are the things we want you to work on. Those are the things we want you to change. Because once you get those barriers out the way, it will help people to thrive. But at the end of the day, slavery, of course, is going to still impact us to this day because we're at a 400-year disadvantage.
Right.
Right. So to see how far we've come with less resources, less time is crazy to even think about. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think black people are really magic.
Mm-hmm.
I really do, because we do so much with so little.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. if we're ever able to really start to support each other as a community, mm-hmm. really focus on ownership, right? Really focus on family, really focus on discipline and education, like we'll truly be unstoppable. Because black people are already the cool culture to where other cultures look at us for some type of acceptance.
Right.
They look at us to say, okay, are we cool? Mm-hmm. Because if they're doing it, then it must be.
Must be cool, yeah.
But we have to translate that into making sure that we are doing things for ourselves, mm-hmm. and we're not dependent on others. And when you, like, for instance, I represent the Chinatown area of Houston. So mm-hmm. when you drive down Bel Air, you start to see all these grocery stores, banks, restaurants, shopping centers, and they're all owned by the Asian community, right? They bank with each other. They shop with each other. They keep that money there. We don't have that. And even when we did try to have it, like with Black Wall Street, you know, those things were burned down.
Right.
But we have to continue to have that mindset to teach our kids that, you know, you don't have to buy everything. Let me show you how to save. Let me show you how to invest. Mm-hmm. Let me show you how to own. That's the next step we need to get to. And I think the oppression and the things that we went through during slavery to now, we still have not grasped that, because we're still the we still like to try to do things to be accepted or feel like we're accepted. So even I'm guilty of, you'll try to buy the nice car or the nice clothes because you want people to be like, I've made it.
Right.
But we need to translate in those things and not trying to be accepted by others, but finding ways in which to use our resources and our successes to build up our community. And I think if we get to that level, then we really would have made some progress.
Man, I love it, bro.
Yeah.
I love it. What if you're at liberty to speak to it, what does the, first, let me ask this question. How can people support you right now? Just in what you're doing in your life and your mission, is there a way that people can tangibly or just?
Yeah. So biggest thing is, you know, I do a lot on social media. I think that is a good platform for us to connect. So you can follow me on Instagram. It's edwardpollard.esq. And I'm always having different initiatives. Mm-hmm. And so you may see something that interests you that you can be a part of. We're always looking for volunteers. We're always looking for young, energetic people to engage, especially when it comes to the youth. And when I talk to people about, you know, when they ask me, how can I get involved? What can I do to help? Mm-hmm. I say, well, you need to find out what is your passion, right? Is it domestic abuse? You know, is it alcoholism? Is it criminal justice system? Is it kids? Is it animals? Mm-hmm. You know, whatever that is, I'm probably going to have some type of hand in it or be able to assist you and get into that entity to affect some type of change. And when you see me out there doing something that interests you and you want to be a part of it, just contact me either through a DM or you can send a email to my city email that you can find online and just say, hey, I'd like to be a part of XYZ, just like you did with this podcast. You just reached out, and I'm always going to be open to doing what I can to put forth positive energy out there.
Yeah, man. I mean, like I said it earlier before, I'm like, man, when does this dude stop? Yeah. Every day it seems like you're in a different community, different initiatives at that, right? Yeah. Like one day you feel
it's just
somebody.
So much to do, man. I enjoy it. I get up every day, you know, energized and excited about impacting someone or something.
Okay.
And then you get to meet people and do creative things and make memories and make your mark out there. And so, yes, it's a lot to do. We're in the fourth largest city in the country.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's ample opportunity for us all to reach our full potential. You just got to get up and do it.
Okay, man. A few more questions. Can you tell me about a time where you had to get over something that was just like you didn't know how you were going to make it? Right. Or this is just a completely uphill battle. Mm-hmm. But you found some way to overcome or prosper. Do you have any one of those stories?
Yeah. I mean, when I first ran for office, back in 2015, I lost, you know, and it was definitely difficult because you put yourself out there,
right?
You knock on all those doors, people are criticizing you, people, you know, some love you, some hate you, and you put your all into it and you fall short.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, I'm just trying to represent my community, but I guess they don't want that, right?
Wow.
But at the same time, I think God has his own, I know he has his own divine plan. And I think what that taught me was, do you really want this or not?
Mm.
Right? Because you tried and you failed. And in order to actually grab it, You're going to have to work harder. You're going to have to dust yourself up. You're going to go out, have to go out in that same community, shake those same hands, show up to those same meetings, right? And stay at it. And so that's what led me to understand and know that running for office and being a politician is something that I truly want to do. Mm-hmm. Because even after I lost and even though it hurt, I didn't dwell on it too long. And I say, you know what? I just got to stay out there. I don't know what seat is next. I don't know if I'm going to try to run for the same seat or there's something else out there, but I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to stop.
Yeah.
And so I stayed out there and I didn't win the next seat till almost 4 years later.
Wow.
Right. So, I tell people this all the time too. You don't always have to be the best, but you have to be consistent and persistent. And so when I first caught that political bug in 2011, when I was in the state legislature, I won this election at the end of 2019, mm-hmm. right? So it's just 2020 now. That's 9 years ago, and I'm just now in my first year, my first term.
Man.
And so things are gonna take time,
right?
Yeah, I mean, if it's truly something that's special and it's truly something that has value or worth to it, it's not gonna happen overnight.
Right, right, right.
Those get rich quick schemes, man. There is nothing that's sustainable. That comes easy.
Mm.
And so it's going to take a grind. It's going to take a lot of hard work. And so what I try to do is just appreciate the journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about the destination. It's the grind and the journey every day that I think you look back on and you appreciate.
Absolutely.
And so for the people that's out there trying to figure out, you know, why their big break has not happened yet, it will happen, but you have to keep working. If you quit, then it never will happen.
Right. Right,
but eventually, right. If you stay at it, eventually you will get that opportunity. You just got to be ready for it.
Yeah. When preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's when your break comes. So I noticed something on the wall. You got Mamba mentality over there.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. You've talked about being competitive a few times. And if you read your bio, you can tell you have to be a competitive person. And then I also heard you mention your faith a few times or mention God a few times. Can you touch on those two things, being competitive and also where faith or your relationship with God plays into just the man that you are today?
Yeah. So on the competitive tip, I always have been drawn to competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, me versus you. I want to see how I stack up.
Yeah.
and I try to outcompete people. Mm-hmm. I really do. And everything that I do, I want to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And so being a lawyer, that helps because it's you know, plaintiff versus defendant,
right?
That helps. On the political side, it helps because you're running these races against other candidates, mm-hmm. right? And you have to prove that you're the best.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something that attracts me to this space.
Is it an intrinsic thing? Is it an external thing? Do you think it can be taught? Or is it something like
innately? For me, I've always been competitive. I'm pretty sure it can be taught to some level, but you just, for those who have it,
mm-hmm.
and that grind, some people just like to grind, mm-hmm. and work,
yeah.
and outperform someone.
Right, right, right.
Sometimes you either have it or you don't. So I'm one of those people who, you know, I don't like to quit. I don't like to stop. You know, I'm a workaholic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up early. I'm out late. I'm getting it done.
No
excuses.
Nice.
When it comes to my faith, I'm a strong man of God. I have a strong faith background. My mom kept me in the church. I was one of those kids who could not miss church.
Right.
but what that did for me is give me a foundation of never really feeling hopeless or lost.
Nice.
Truly. You know, I know that God has a purpose for me. Sometimes you may not know why something's happening, but if you have faith and you have true belief that the Lord has your best interest and that his son died for you, then you just have to trust the process.
That's
right. He wants to see, for me, he wants to see that, hey, I'm blessing you with things. What are you going to do with these mm-hmm. blessings? And I think he blesses us to bless others. And it seems like the more I pour out into other people, he pours into me. And it's real. When you pay your tithes, you start to see, man, things are moving. Or when you're out there in the community and you're helping people, things are moving. Especially when you're doing it when the cameras are not around,
mm-hmm.
right? You never know who people are, right? I mean, and what that could turn into and how God is working in your life. And so the Lord being the foundation of everything you do, should bring you some type of comfort, mm-hmm. right? Because regardless of your situation, if you truly believe that he has purpose for your life and you're working towards that and you're doing it in a way in which you're trying to be respectable to his word, mm-hmm. it's going to pay off.
Bruh.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave that right there.
Yeah, it's going
to
pay
off. I'm not going to add to that. All right. One last question before we get into this.
Okay.
And that's if you're at liberty to answer it in any way. But what does the next decade look like for you?
Next decade is continuing to serve, mm-hmm. Continuing to do what I can to impact my community, and using my platform to really try to change the narrative for the young black male, mm-hmm. right? I grew up only seeing basketball players or rappers or entertainers on TV or showing up to the school to basketball camps or football camps.
Right.
So I told myself, now that I have this platform, I want to be able to use that to show them you don't always have to go that route. You
Sweet.
Can do something else.
Sweet.
I did it. You can do it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, man. We're about to get into rapid fire.
All right.
So the only rule is to say the first thing that comes out your mind. Nothing crazy, though. I'm not
okay.
Get you
is it like one word or
a
phrase?
You know what? The first thing, one
right.
word. A lot of people go one word, but if you got a phrase, even
okay.
better. And plus, I know you in politics, so I don't got nothing. I intentionally kept it clean.
Okay.
So, first word, family.
Life.
Legacy.
Family.
Obama.
The GOAT.
Justice.
Justice. Much needed.
Community.
Community. Unity.
Success.
Is what you make it.
Favorite food?
Pizza.
Favorite movie?
Above the Rim.
Hey, Edward Pollard is?
A person who loves his community, a person who loves to serve people, and a person who's just trying to get better each and every day.
If I had $1 billion, I would.
If I had $1 billion, you know what? I would invest half of it in like a hedge fund,
yeah.
and turn that $1 billion hey. Into like $10 billion.
There we go.
Bring that back, buy all the blocks up.
Yeah, you talking.
And when
now.
We talking about Chinatown, we'd have Edward Pollard Town,
like Akon City. Akon,
yeah.
you seen that? Yeah, it's about to be crazy. I'm trying to invest in that. By the way, all right, coffee or tea?
Tea.
Money or free time?
Money.
The city or the country?
City.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Describe yourself in three words.
Confident, confident, confident.
Hey, would you rather have your wife upset with you or your mom?
My wife.
All right. Now it's time for the obituary question. I had to throw that curveball in
okay.
there. All right. So it's, man, you live to be 140 years old somehow, and we at your funeral. I'm still at your funeral, so I'm still alive.
Okay.
You know, what would you suppose your obituary reads about you?
You know, I hope it says that I'm kind, I'm caring, that I live life to its fullest. Mm-hmm. And I want people there just to celebrate life and the impact that I may have had on theirs with just a lot of singing and understanding that I'm in a better place.
I love it. I love it. All right. The people want to know, what are you watching? What are you listening to? What are you reading?
Yeah.
Any of those things.
So I'm watching a lot of basketball right now because
right.
we've been on this hiatus.
Exactly.
And so basketball is on TV all day, every day. And I'm binging mm-hmm. basketball. I was binging Netflix, but now I'm binging basketball. What else did you ask?
What are you listening to right now?
I listen to a lot of Jay-Z.
Okay.
Yeah. I listen to a lot of Jay-Z. So I can go through his entire catalog from Reasonable Doubt all the way to 444.
Yeah.
So that's usually on rotation. But I was watching the 2 Chainz, Rick Ross versus the other day.
What'd you think about that?
I mean, Ross is my guy, but 2 Chainz has a lot of hits. So this week I have been on my 2 Chainz mix.
That's what's
yeah.
up. And then are you reading anything?
Yeah, I'm rereading Jay-Z Decoded.
Okay, I haven't read it.
Yeah, yet. And then I'm also reading, it's called The History of the Black Elite,
okay.
the story of Daniel Murray. And it is a story about the late 1800s and the black elite in Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
and the stature that blacks had at that point in time, okay, when it came to education, jobs, just lifestyle.
Yeah.
And then segueing into like the Jim Crow era, mm-hmm, and how just by being black, you were at the bottom of the totem pole, and what that transition was like for those people.
Man, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
All right, man. Last thing I like to ask, you could do both, you could do either or, but do you have any parting advice just for people in general, or the greatest piece of advice you've ever received in your life? Would you like to share?
Yeah, I touched on it earlier. You don't have to be the best. You just need to be consistent, mm-hmm, right? And everything that you do, don't waver, right? Have that drive, that internal fortitude to know that you are going to accomplish whatever it is. And it may take a long time, but if you truly want it, then you have to stay at it. Because if you don't, there's someone else out there, mm-hmm, that you may not know, that they're getting up every day and they're grinding it out just as hard as you. And they want it just as much as you. And you have to understand that if you quit, you opening the door for them to have it all. And life is not going to be easy, and it's not going to be fair. But for those who truly work at it,
yeah,
who are truly driven, everything that you want, you will get. You know, opportunity is limitless, and life rewards hard work.
Yeah, man.
And so don't give up. Yeah.
Bro, brother Edward Pollard, man, I have to say thank you. This is a crazy way to kick off season two, man.
Yeah.
I am honored to have you, man.
Nah, I'm glad to do this.
Man, this was very dope.
This is one of my first podcast interviews, yeah, that's gone like this. So it's a blessing, man.
Man,
thank you.
I appreciate you, man. All right, guys. I'll catch you guys next time. Thanks for tuning in. Peace. Thanks again for tuning in to the Transformation Chamber. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. To find out more about Edward Pollard, follow him at edwardpollard.esq. To find out more about the Transformation Chamber, follow me at joshuatdada or visit my website at joshuatdada.com. Until next time, peace.